You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to a new episode of Delirious Nomads, brought to you by Blacklight Media Records, a weekly podcast hosted by yours truly, celebrity chef Chris Santos. I hate calling myself that. And underground metal connoisseur Matt Bacon, who loves being called that. This is your new favorite podcast for all things heavy metal, as well as breakdowns of your favorite combat sports and riffing on some food talk every week with very special guests from across the globe.
Hello and welcome to the Delirious Nomads podcast, brought to you by Blacklight Media. I'm Matt Bacon here with my beautiful co-host, Chris Santos, and we are very excited today to have our most furthest afield band, a band who have inspired us and who we find fascinating and exciting and exhilarating, a band who are without a doubt a favorite around the Metal Blade office.
Yep.
Which I always thought was fun. A band who deeply understand modern death metal in a way I feel like very few other bands do. We are talking, of course, about Nicolas Cage Fighter. And today we have guitarist, principal songwriter, tattooed freak, Justin on the show. How are you, Justin?
Good, man. How are you, Scott?
What's happening, man?
Nothing.
So good to have you on, man. I'll tell you, I personally was so excited when you guys made the decision to get on board with Blacklight Media and Metal Blade, because I just want to see you guys blow up. I think you guys are fucking amazing. And I just can't wait for the world to hear the new music that you guys are working on. And you also have maybe the best name in all of heavy metal.
I've seen a few ones similar to that now, sort of other ones like that. But yeah, it is good.
That's a great place to start. How did you come up with that name?
Honestly, there's no really good story to it. I remember when the band was first about to start. So Tom, our bass player and our original vocalist, was sort of putting this band together, and they were looking for a guitarist. And at that time, I was playing in this sort of pop punk female fronted band, and it was a bit of fun. It was a good learning experience, but I sort of wanted to do something a little bit heavier on the side as well. I played in heavier bands before that, but I remember getting a phone call from this random number one day, and it was Tom, our bass player, and he said, "Hey, I heard you're a guitarist, and that we want to start this new heavy band. Would you be keen to play for us?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's fine." And I don't know why, but on the phone, I just said, "As long as we can call it Nicolas Cage Fighter." But we all just started pissing ourselves on the phone and thought that was super funny, and it sort of just stuck from there. But I'm not too sure where the actual idea comes from, eh?
That's great. So it was just you fucking around being a dick?
Yeah, just me being a dick on the phone, and then it ended up sticking.
Yeah. It's a great name. It's a great name.
Yeah, it is. Hey.
So, good. So the origin of the band is actually pretty interesting, because you had sort of an initial run, then you went away for like a decade, basically.
Yeah, so we've the band's coming up to 10 years next year since it's been a band, but there is probably like 4 or 5 years in there that we didn't sort of do much. So before the band started, we've all sort of known each other throughout the music scene for a long time. So in high school, I was playing in some sort of deathcore bands. That was around that time when deathcore was blowing up. Davo was playing in sort of death metal bands and that sort of stuff. And Tom comes from a sort of punk background. He played a lot of bass and used to skate and stuff like that. So I went to high school with Tom. He was a year above me. So I used to ride BMX, he used to ride skateboards. We sort of didn't really like each other that much through high school down the skate park, but that's sort of how I knew him. So me and I used to jam with Dabo's little brother, so Dabo being Matt, our drummer. I used to jam with his little brother. I used to play bass. And I remember we used to go to his house all the time and just have a shred. And Matt's kit was always set up there. So we'd just muck around on it. And then Matt would get home from like school or whatever and jump on the kit and just absolutely destroy it. And I was just like, who the fuck is this dude? Like, this guy's so hectic. So, yeah, so when the band sort of started to form, so Tom and our original vocalist said they're going to put this new heavy band together in Ballarat. We were sort of working out like, who are we going to get for drummers and stuff like that. And that's when I sort of remembered Dad. I was like, we need to ask this dude. But at that point, I was like, there's no way. Like, this dude's way too good to want to play with us. But we tried out a couple of dudes, and it was just like, yeah, the ideas are there, but it just wasn't sort of good enough. And then I remember messaging Matt, and I just said, you know, would you be keen to come and have a jam with us? At that time, he was in another band as well. And he said, yeah, that's fine, man. So he come around and just absolutely crushed it, just every song, like all the ideas just sort of fell into place. So that sort of kicked stuff off with the band. And probably the first 2 years, we just played shows every weekend. At that point too, it was like deathcore and metalcore and stuff was just absolutely blowing up. So Ballarat was just like littered with bands, you know what I mean? You could put a show on every weekend, and we were all sort of really tight friends within that group. I know like everyone sort of went their own ways these days, but the hardcore metal scene was sort of thriving. So for the first couple of years, we just played shows and shows every week, a lot of local stuff. And we put out our EP 3350. At that point too, it was sort of hard to get your music out as well. We were sort of just running it on YouTube and stuff like that. So we did what we sort of could off it. But so we toured a fair bit off that. And then at that point, we sort of, I feel like we sort of thought we were maybe getting too big for Ballarat. We were young kids at the time too, so we were sort of like, fuck it, let's take the band and move it somewhere else, and you know, maybe it's going to be better if we move this way. So we moved up the East Coast with basically the whole band, and it went from playing shows every weekend to playing two shows in 2 years. We sort of didn't look into the scene enough. There was barely any scene out there, but the band sort of drifted apart a little bit while we were up there. People started, you know, getting girlfriends, and our original vocalists got married and they had to start having a family. And I locked in a really cool job up there. So I sort of stayed around and just kind of kept working up there. Some of the other guys came home. And after a couple of years of just sort of, I guess, finding ourselves up there, we all come back to Ballarat by like our old vocalist. And we got a message one day and someone said, you know, we'd love to see NCF sort of do a reunion show or something like that. Like it'd be huge. So, I messaged the rest of the boys, not knowing if anyone was sort of going to be keen, and everyone was like, yeah, fucking knows, let's do it. So we put together this reunion show. It ended up being sold out show. It was huge, and that sort of just reignited our flame to do it all. And we had to get Nick, our new vocalist, in. I sort of knew him from around the scene. He's a little bit younger than us, so he used to message me all the time. He'd send me videos of him doing like vocal covers and be like, what do you think, bro? Is this sick and all that sort of thing? I was like, fuck yeah, man, this is awesome. I remember saying to him, I was like, I'm going to use you for something. Like, when the time comes, we'll get you involved. And then, when we knew NCF was sort of getting back together, we asked him to do that show, and he was, keen out. So that all sort of fell into place. And then, we did the show, and everyone was just like, we've just got to keep doing this. I had a heap of music written and, yeah, that was just that's what started it all off again.
What year was that?
So we did the reunion show. If my timeline's correct, I reckon it's 2019. Maybe 2018, 2019. And then we put the two track out called Hal and Me. That was just sort of just to get our feedback into, you know what I mean? Just put some music out and see what people think. And after that, we're just like, yeah, let's do it. So that was when we did the follow up with Caster out. And, yeah. That sort of started it all again.
So it was such a significant break, and there's a new singer. It's almost as if you're starting fresh.
Exactly right. Yep. But we've all known each other for so long. It's not like it's a bunch of new dudes in the band either. You know what I mean? Like, I've known Davo and Tom since we were, you know, young kids in high school. Like, where you go, friendships are 15 plus years in this band. It's not like we're, you know, a bunch of new dudes sort of getting to know each other. We all know our ins and outs. And yeah, it's just a good group of friends that just love what we're doing.
What's the situation over there now in terms of being able to go out and play shows and whatnot?
We're good at the moment. I mean, we just wrapped up some East Coast shows. We are unfortunately all came home with COVID, which is, I mean, bound to happen at some point or another. But in terms of being able to move around, yeah, we're fine now. There's nothing locked in to say you can't cross borders or anything like that. I think it's just a matter of taking that gamble. If we do go out on the road, there is that chance that we might come home with COVID or something like that. But yeah, that's basically.
I'm actually going tonight here. I'm in Los Angeles. I'm going to see two bands from Australia tonight. I'm going to see Alpha Wolf, Polaris, and Alpha Wolf tonight. Yeah.
Both are great bands. They're like the next generation of Australia bands that are just, yeah, taking it to the next level.
Yeah, and also Cursed Earth is from Australia too, right?
They are. They're from Perth. So I think one of the dudes from Cursed Earth is Justice for the Damned, which is another really great Australian band. But yeah, not all awesome bands.
Yeah, really great. Really great scene.
It's interesting because that scene is completely popping off. Why do you think that is?
Do you mean like the Australian or just like the metalcore and stuff sort of stuff?
The Australian scene. Because like literally, like I'm not even joking. I'm going to make fun of Chris for a second. Like every other band Chris sends me is Australian.
It's true.
But... No, but like, right, Chris? Like, it's like bizarre how many Australian bands Chris sends me where, and Chris will literally just be like, oh, this is cool, Matt, listen to this. And like 50% of the time it's Australian. And I'm like,
it's an Aussie band.
It's insane.
Yeah, I don't know. We've just got a lot of good bands here at the moment. It seems to be just start thriving. In terms of music, though, if you put something on, does Aussie stuff sound different to American? Like, do you know what I mean? In terms of like the music
and stuff? Here's my theory. Having worked with doing marketing for an Australian agency and having been down there to talk. And I want your opinion on this. What I found is people are really stoked on stuff because they know they're not necessarily going to get an opportunity to see that for another 4 years. Whereas for me, like if I want to go see band we all love, Black Dahlia Murder, right? You get to see Black Dahlia Murder at best, if we're being honest, every, 3 years?
Yeah, exactly right.
You know, I get to see them at least once a year. And if I want to see them twice in a year, it is either A, relatively likely they'll come back to New York City twice in a year, or B, not hard for me to go see them somewhere on their smaller tour. You know, if I really want to go see Black Dahlia Murder. But like for you, it's two things. So you're isolated. So you're a lot more passionate about the Euro and North American bands who come. And then I think that also lets you like really dial in a great local scene where people actually care about the bands because they're not in America. It's hard to have a local scene now because there's a million touring bands. You know what I mean? So it's like, why would I, you know, like local shows don't really have clout really because there's just, you know, in New York City on any given night, there'll be five good tours. You know, I'm in Berlin, same deal. And so it just seems kind of, you know, and it seems like you guys can actually have local scenes that take care of each other, that grow together, and people, it seems a lot more gelled. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, being like, you know, in America, as you said, you can do a tour and do 30 shows or something like that.
Yeah.
When you're in Australia and you say you're doing a tour, it might be five shows, you know what I mean? Like, and they're all spaced out, you know, due to how far you sort of go travel between each.
Yeah, like it's not five fun shows. It's like 5 8-hour drives.
Yeah, exactly right. Like our last run, we did a drive 24 hours straight to play one show, jump back in the van, drove 10 hours back down the road to play another show. And then 10 hours home, that was two shows. Like, you know, it's a long way to go to play. But yeah, I definitely agree that the community is a lot more sort of tighter in that because there's not shows every sort of night of the week. It's, you know, you might get to see your favorite band twice a year, but I guess it's sort of hard in one sense too. If you are isolated in Australia, you're trying to tour all the time. How many times can you play those five shows before people are going to stop coming to your shows? Do you know what I mean? Like, you sort of got to make sure they're spaced out enough, but not too spaced out that it's too long between them. But yeah.
Yeah, it's fucking weird, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, okay, so I'm glad that you subscribe to my theory of Australian bands. I wanted to have you and Chris talk for a second about a subject both of you are passionate about, which is tattoos.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Because you're a tattoo artist, right?
So I do a lot of piercings. So our shop is like, I guess, tattoo and then piercing. I'm mainly just doing piercings. But I don't know enough about it, yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, Matt, you don't have any?
I don't have any, no. I'm also old enough now that I can't get any.
You're sort of going past that point.
Exactly, right? Like, I can't be 26 and get my first tattoo.
Oh, shut up.
You can.
I mean, I can, but, like, you know. Like, but I'm kind of, like, at the point. But, like, and then also, like, my new thing is, like, Justin, you don't really know this, but I work with Killswitch Engages Management, who are friends of ours, and their main two guys are also like, I dress like someone's dad, and they also and like have no tattoos, and they also dress like someone's dad and have no tattoos, and I'm like, this is our thing. So we're like the like business boys.
Yeah.
But I don't know,
I'm 51 in about a week or so. I turned 51 and I'm doing a whole hip to ankle sleeve. So
how you feeling about that?
I feel like it's going to suck.
I definitely find the older I get, the shitter I get at sitting with tattoos.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I was fine. But like these days, if you start and I'm 15 minutes in and I'm sort of looking at the clock already.
Right.
Checking minutes, you know, how long left have we got?
I'm trying to do a full back piece and a full right leg sleeve. And I know that it's going to be brutal.
Yeah, I still haven't touched my back. I've just I know like people every time I say it, someone's like, "Well, you got your fucking head tattooed, like it can't be that bad."
But yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, come on, buddy.
Yeah, exactly right. But I don't know. I feel like back wouldn't be too good. But yeah, I don't know. I just my tattoo sessions now are sort of few and far in between. I just I can't be bothered with it anymore. It's too much.
Yeah, no, hangovers and tattoos are worse the older you get.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
But Matt, I absolutely think that you still have at least, you know, the rest of your life to reconsider.
Yeah, maybe a little like NCF tattoo or something.
Yeah, there you
Nicolas go. Nicolas Cage should be back.
Okay, Chris, I'll get a black light sleeve if you get a black light sleeve.
No, that's not happening. I've tattooed women's names on my body, and that was the kiss of death. So we're not going to do that to Black Light Media. Or to NCF. We're not going to do it.
Yeah, let's not do it. Yeah.
Without getting too specific, because we want there to be, you know, we want to make the proper announcements when it's time. But I know that you guys are in the studio and you're writing the new record. Like, what's the process? How's it going? Like, are the songs coming quick or?
Yeah, all done. Hey? So the process was, it was hard just because of COVID. So we sort of, it was a lot of in and out time in the studio. We'd go in for a day and we might have got a day to do something and then lockdown would kick in and we couldn't go back to the studio for a month or 6 weeks, however it worked. But yeah, record's completely finished, the new one. But it sort of went from being like, all right, let's get this record and done in a month in the studio to like 6 months.
Mm.
The time in the studio was awesome. We love working with Guy. He knows exactly sort of what we're trying to do. He's done our last two records, even Hell and Me, the two new track, and then Cast You Out, the EP. So, yeah, this time we spent a lot more time doing pre-pro. A lot of our stuff before was me and Dabo just writing the songs, you know, where we jam, and then me taking them to the studio and we're just laying them down. But this time I probably spent 2 months prior to going to the studio just in every week and just tweaking stuff, maybe cutting stuff out that doesn't need to be there or, you know, something repeated, like do we need to put that there? And just really trying to make the best songs that we could, but still keep it like that NCF vibe. But yeah, we're super, super, super proud of the new album. Yeah, we can't wait for it to come out.
Yeah, we can't either, actually. I think it's gonna go over really, really great here. And then we gotta obviously figure out a way to get you guys here and tour.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We can't wait to get overseas. I think that's just all of our dream, especially mine is, you know, from a young kid, it was always fucking, I want to be a fucking rock star when I'm older. But I'd love to get over there and play some shows and that sort of thing. So now that I guess restrictions and international travel and it's all back on the cards, hopefully this album kicks off and people get into it and it gives us that chance to get over there.
I'm always curious with bands, Matt, we've never really talked about this before, but, you know, with the vocal style that you guys have, having not actually gone on a long tour, is there any work that needs to be done to ensure that he's good for 6 weeks of singing, you know, in this kind of fashion?
Definitely. I think so too. It's something something we've all talked about as a band. Honestly, I don't know how any sort of vocalist can do it that night after night. Like, I'd be absolutely wrecked. But I think for Nick too, like, this is his first sort of serious band as well. So yeah, he's working a lot on sort of stamina. But with each show we play too, he just gets better and better. Like, he's you know, how he is on stage and his performance and stuff like that just gets better and better. But I guess in terms of doing, like, you know, a big run of shows, that'll sort of come down to how he goes on the night. But hopefully no dramas.
Matt did give me a brief vocal lesson once.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good day.
That was a good day.
How'd you go?
And just suffice it to say that I could never sing in a deathcore band.
Chris can sing. He can do it. He's getting there.
You can.
Oh, yeah.
We need to find it.
Yeah, the boys asked one time, they were like, you should just do some backup vocals on stage. I was like, there's no way. I sound like a chipmunk or something like that.
Well, no, we need you for album 3 when you break out the eyeliner and clean vocals.
Yeah. Yes. Right. So, I'll leave that to the other boys.
That's what I'm always threatening Capra with.
Yeah.
And then in the meantime, while you're waiting for the record to be finalized and for it to come out, do you guys still continue to write, or do you take a pause and just...
Yeah, so it hasn't sort of stopped. Quietly, I've probably got about 6 songs down for the next album.
Really?
Yeah, just want to keep at it. There's going to sort of, I guess, not have any breaks while, you know, feeling creative and that, just sort of keep the writing going. So same thing again. I'll probably towards the next half of this year, we'll go back to the studio and I'm just going to start getting all these ideas down and sort of, yeah, start fleshing them out, seeing what we can come up with. Yeah, a handful of songs I really like that I'm keen to use for, yeah, the next album.
Nice, very nice.
You and I have talked before about how Nicolas Cage Fighter is very much kind of a distillation of, like you were talking about earlier, sort of the 2006 to 2011 deathcore thing.
Yeah.
And like executing that in a way that's a little bit more mature and thoughtful than a lot of those bands were. You know, there isn't as many, there's much more of an influence on of death metal than there is of nu metal.
Definitely.
Yeah. Right. You know, whereas I think with like some of the Suicide Silence stuff or whatever, you could definitely hear like bounce riffs.
Yep.
How do you blend those things? Like, what's the mix of influences precisely? Do you feel like you're the next generation of the sort of first mainstream wave of deathcore? Where do you feel you fit in this sort of pantheon?
It's different. And sort of without band, I sort of range a fair bit. My influences are honestly a lot of purely through my dad as well. Like, sort of like our body stuff was just music growing up, but a lot of sort of 90s metal, death metal bands like you probably don't hear a lot of it through our music, but a lot of my influences are stuff like Sepultura and Slayer and stuff like that. So on the top of that too, I grew up listening to a lot of hardcore, going to hardcore shows for a long time. So I feel like I'm sort of blending the two, sort of just metal, death metal, and just tough hardcore. Davo comes from like just a super death metal background, so I think his style of drumming is just is what sort of takes it from being just a sort of, you know, a metal hardcore band to, like, you know, as you said, sort of hardcore that, but very inspired by death metal. And then Nick can just do sort of anything with his vocals. There was no sort of like, this is what we want you to do in the band. It was like, what can you do, and just do all of it. Our songs aren't full of blast beats, that we're not sort of, you know, full blown death metal band, but we let Nick do every sort of style of vocal he wants to. So I think it's just a good blend of all of it together. We're not sort of we're not trying to sound like anyone at the moment. We're sticking to, I guess, to our roots and what we sort of all grew up listening to. And I think a big part of it too is, yeah, I guess, music, you know, history, and just knowing a lot of you know bands I grew up listening to. Like, you know, I just got into it so much that it really sort of feeds into the music that I'm playing now. So, yeah, a lot of 90s death metal, yeah, a lot of hardcore, and then we're just sort of throwing it all together, see what we can come up with.
You said you were in before this, you were in a pop punk band, female fronted, which is as far away a departure as it could be from Steel Spider.
Yeah, so previous to that, man, so I played in a fair few bands. And previous to that, I was in a deathcore band. It was sort of, like I said before, that was the time when deathcore was fucking popping off. And yeah, we were just young kids playing breakdowns, doing pig squeals over the top of them. But it was fun. That was sort of my starting point at playing live shows. And that from there, there was a already pretty established pop punk girlfriend event. They were called Girl vs Ghost, and they were pretty well known sort of in like our hometown, but sort of around Australia as well. And I just finished up with the old band, and I got a message saying, I heard you play guitar, that sort of thing. Did you want to get involved? I was a bit hesitant just because I wasn't sort of into that style of music, but I said, I'll give it a go. As long as we can chuck in the breakdown here, and they're just sort of mucking around. And yeah, within a couple of practices, we down tuned the guitars and they were screaming and breakdown. So we did that for a little bit, but yeah, they kicked me out probably not long out sort of after. I don't think I sort of fitted the piece very well, but it was really good sort of learning experience. They were all out. They sort of taught me a lot about how to write songs properly. And I learned a lot from that pop punk sort of, I guess, structure of songs, and sort of a lot of it does to this day still has to do with how I write songs and how they're sort of mapped out. So yeah, learn a lot through it, but yeah, just wasn't sort of for me. But that was, yeah, I guess once I did leave, that was the start of it. Yeah, so it also worked out in the end anyway.
I mean, my hot take is Sum 41 is secretly the most influential band on metal today.
Oh my God, shut up.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, but like, I'm just saying, like, objectively speaking, a huge chunk of people who like guitar music, who are between the ages, it's like Sum 41 and My Chemical Romance are like the origin of all guitar music today. Because 80% of people who like guitar music between the ages of like 24 and 38, the first bands they were into were one of those two.
Yeah, yeah. So musically for me, I come from, I guess, a fairly sort of a musical background. My uncle plays violin in Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
Wait, what? Wait, you can't just walk past this. Break this down.
So my uncle's Warren Ellis, the dude with the big beard and the plays the violin.
That's, I've seen him. That's insane. That's your uncle? Oh my God.
Yeah, so that's my uncle. So my dad grew up listening to guitar, playing guitar and stuff as well. But I sort of really come from a musical background, but just got heavy into like heavy music from a young age. I remember in primary school taking like Korn, Life is Peachy to Show and Tell. And this is like, you know, 8, 9 years off. Yeah, yeah. Took my dad's CD. He didn't know I had it. Took my dad's CD to primary school. I remember the teacher sort of looking at me like, oh, good job, Justin. I remember it pulling me up like after class. Just like, does your dad know you have that CD? Like, yeah, you probably need to take that home and maybe don't bring it back to school sort of thing. But yeah, it was sort of metal, which just stuck with me from a very early age. I remember taking mum to go to buy the first Slipknot album when I was in primary school. And I remember the bloke at the counter, I'm walking up to him saying, hey, man, just looking for the Slipknot CD. And he sort of looked at me and looked at my mum. He's like, who's the CD for? And mum's like, it's for him. And she's, and the dude's like, I can't sell it to you. He's way too young to be listening to Slipknot. But I used to save up my cash. I remember dad used to give me, like, you know, just a little bit of money here and there. And he'd take it to the CD shop and I'd buy a CD. So I remember buying, like, Cowboys from Hell or Pantera or something like that. But yeah, it was the early sort of metal stuff that really stuck with me. It's still with me to today. Korn, Sepultura, Slipknot, Slayer, that sort of stuff. And then from there, sort of...
Not My Chemical Romance or Sum 41.
Nah, like that sort of stuff for me was a little bit later. I sort of went, was more in the metal, and then sort of veered off and went sort of into your pop punk and your hardcore and all that sort of stuff.
What age were you when you picked up a guitar?
So I got my first guitar, I was probably like 13 or 14 in high school. So I used to just muck around on bikes all the time, and I was always breaking bones and that sort of thing. I was always in and out of school just because I would do stupid shit and hurt myself. So I remember the last one was I snapped my leg real bad. I remember saying, mum saying, like, that's it, like, you need to find it. Basically a new hobby, like, we're not fucking doing this all the time. And dad came home a couple of days later and say, guitar, and that was sort of what sort of started. I always wanted to play in bands before, but I just didn't know any instruments. I remember like being in high school, like early in high school, and I'd sort of sit with like band kids and that. They would start bands, and I was sort of like, "Yeah, sick! I'll learn something. I'll do percussion." Or I just wanted to be part of it, but didn't have an instrument. It wasn't until I picked up the guitar and sort of all sort of went from there. I played drums for a little bit, so I just couldn't get the hang of it too much. I don't think my parents wanted the drum kit in the house either. So, yeah, dad bought me my first guitar. I'm left-handed too, so that was always sort of a bit of a curveball too. He basically taught me like the simple stuff upside down, and then after that I sort of learned myself, just taught myself how to play guitar. I haven't had any lessons ever or anything like that, but I think that sort of that comes back to just like being so into my music and just really picking apart everything that, you know, that was on from such a young age. It just felt very natural to me, like, you know, trying to work out how to play songs and stuff like that. But yeah, all sort of kicked off musically in probably 13, 14 years old.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
I don't think I've watched a bunch of videos, but I don't think I ever realized that you were left-handed.
Yeah, there's not many of us around, hey? It's always hard to
find. There aren't.
Nah.
There are not a lot of left-handed guitar players out there, at least in the metal.
Very limited in terms of guitars, like in Arbor and stuff like that. So that's my sort of stick with ESP guitars. They seem to have the biggest range of stuff for me. But every now and then I'll meet someone on the show, another lefty, like, hey, here he goes, another lefty. But yeah, very, very rarely.
It's just interesting to me because, like, I'm left-handed, but it never even crossed my mind to play left-handed guitars because I was like, that seems ludicrously inconvenient. I'll just suffer.
So I've had a few people say, like, why didn't you use your prominent hand to, like, didn't you try and learn the other way? And I was like, fuck, I didn't think of that either. Probably would have been good to learn from the start. That is so good.
Whoops. Anyway, as we head towards the end, is there anything else? You know, there's a few shows coming up, right?
Yeah.
Is there anything we need to be aware of? What's going on?
So at the moment, just getting prepared for the release of the new album. We've got a few more shows locked in for next month. After that, it's pretty much go time until the album comes out, and then we'll do the Australian tour off the back of that.
Fuck yeah. Awesome. That's awesome.
Where can people find you on the socials?
Yeah, so Spotify, Instagram, Facebook, we're on basically anything. Jump on YouTube, we've got a heap of videos up on there as well. But all the places you can find our music.
And it's just at Nicolas Cage Fighter, yeah?
Exactly right. Yeah.
No H, just NIC.
No H, yeah, fuck, no H, yeah.
Was that intentional from the start, or was that just like a fuck up?
That's how his name's actually spelled. So, like, if you ever see Nicolas Cage, there's no H in it, but everyone just never bothers to look at it and puts a H in it.
Okay. No, I just, you know, anyway, thank you so much for coming on. We're so excited about you.
Thanks for having me, dude.
For sure, man.
And dear listeners, we'll be back next week. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Awesome. Catch us later. Thank you.
All right. So that was awesome. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening to Delirious Nomads, sponsored by Blacklight Media. We will be coming back at you next week with another awesome guest. Be sure to follow Blacklight Media on socials for new music and more. And above all, keep it heavy.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.